This is Audible.
Harlequin Teen and Harper Audio presents Wand Fasted by Lori Forrest, performed by Jesse Valinsky.
Prologue. I've gotten used to the names they call us. Crows. Roaches. Hedge witches. I no longer cry when I'm shoved in the market or spat on in the streets. I endure their mocking, hateful glares and the signs of protection they make against me to ward off my perceived evil. I am Gardnerian. As such, I'm barely tolerated here, stranded in a sea of Celts, allowed to exist only because my aptitude for healing brews is considered useful in this tiny, remote village. It would be easier, perhaps, if my appearance didn't set me apart so much. My forest green eyes and dark hair might seem unremarkable, but the black tunic and long skirt I wear, paired with a silver Urthea orb necklace, mark me as one of the first children. And the way my skin shimmers a faint emerald in the dark, perhaps the most undeniable sign of all, makes it impossible for me to hide what I am. A Gardnerian mage, hated by all but my own people. When they painted heretics on our barn and set fire to it, I thought that was the worst it could get. Until they sent the dragons. But they didn't count on us having dragons of our own. And they certainly didn't count on her. Our great mage. The bringer of fire. The storm of death. The crow sorceress. Our deliverance. The Black Witch.
Chapter 1. Front lines.
We're not doing business with crows, Mistress Darrow states. Not anymore. She stands with one fist propped on a broad hip, her apple-cheeked face twisted up into a triumphant sneer, strands of her blonde hair escaping her crimson kerchief. The flag of Keltania is pinned above her ample bosom, an iron black X on a rectangle of blood-red linen. Her husband, Merchant Darrow, seems embarrassed, his own Keltanian flag haphazardly pinned up near his shoulder. He looks down at the wooden counter in front of him, toying with the smooth abacus and deliberately avoiding my gaze. Panic rears inside me. My grip tightens on the apothecary crate I've set down before them, tiny medicine bottles lined up in the segmented box. I think of the money we need for our journey east to Verpatia, of the red tinge to the leaves, winter close on our heels. My elderly grandfather, my young brother. Doveshire has become too dangerous for Gardnerians. It took ages for my brother Wren and me to convince our stubborn grandfather that we needed to leave. But now, everything is ready for our departure. The wagon is packed, the horses already hitched, the house closed up. All we need is the money for these medicines I've spent weeks brewing. The money we've been counting on to buy supplies. Supplies we'll need to survive. I straighten my shoulders, trying not to shrink under Mistress Darrow's glare. I don't understand. The last time I came in, you were happy to buy my medicines. She blows out a disgusted breath. Dark witches with dark magic. That's what your lot is. First you twist the faith that belongs to us. Then you use your dark magic to steal a nice big chunk of our land. She gives her chin a defiant lift, her smile full of venom. Well, the tide is turning. Your magic's faded. Some of what she's saying is true, to the sadness of many Gardnerians. Most of my people have no magic or weak magic at best, and we haven't had a great mage in generations. But our magic isn't dark, and I've never done a thing to harm her or anyone else. Though I'm sorely tempted to in this moment. I can feel her angry gaze on me as I turn to her husband. Please, Merchant Darrow, I plead, the forced politeness of my tone ringing false in my own ears. I've spent weeks preparing these healing brews for your shop. My family is counting on me to sell them. Conscience seems to get the better of Merchant Darrow, his lined face tensing in discomfort.
Just this last time, Tesla,
he forces out gruffly, still not looking at me as he pulls the vials of medicines closer to inspect them. Mistress Darrow throws him a tight look of fury before grabbing the crate and jerking it away from the both of us.
"We'll take them, then,"
she smiles malevolently.
"Just like you crows took our land."
She sets a hard gaze on her husband.
"No payment."
I'm not sure I've heard her right.
"What?"
She skewers me with her glare.
"Oh, we're on to the lot of you, figuring you'll wave your wands around and take everything we've got from under us. Well, not this time. We're going to fight, and we'll stamp you all out before you have a chance to raise up another dark mage. And we're taking our land back."
My heart pounds like a hammer. I lunge for the crate, but she's anticipated me, pulling it quickly out of reach just as Brandon and two other burly blacksmith apprentices lumber into the guild market.
"You can't!"
I protest, full of righteous fury and mounting desperation as she sets the crate on a high shelf behind her.
"That's a whole month's work. We've nothing else to trade. You're stealing!"
"Got a roach in here? Causing trouble?"
Brandon saunters toward me, smelling of sweat and smoke. His blonde hair is greasy, and the flag of Keltania is securely pinned over his heart. I glare up at him with undisguised loathing. Undaunted, Brandon reaches out with a broad, dirty hand to paw at my hair. I flinch away, and he laughs, a cruel gleam in his eyes.
"At least she's a pretty roach."
"Is she?"
Garrick sidles up and gives me a slow once-over, Adam's apple bobbing in his skinny, chicken-like neck. He flicks up the edge of my tunic with his finger.
"You'd never know it, with all this black fabric they wear.
Could have three titties for all we know."
I recoil and slap my tunic hem down flat, flushing with embarrassment and horror as the young men and Mistress Darrow break into laughter. I'm stunned by their brazen cruelty and find myself blinking back tears.
"We could check that,"
Stocky Colton offers, mischief lighting his eyes. Their chortling quickly turns to an open leer. I shrink back, my gaze darting toward the door, then desperately back to my medicines. "Merchant Darrow won't let them hurt me," I reason, trying to calm myself. "He's never been unkind, and surely he'll pay me." Out of the corner of my eye, through the store's large front windows, I see young Celtic men running down the street, armed with bows and swords, the flag of Keltania pinned to their arms. My mind is cast into confusion and mounting alarm.
"What's happening?"
I ask nervously.
"Where are they going?"
Brandon leans in close, and I know what his answer will be before he speaks.
"To get rid of all of you."
"A purging." The villagers have murmured about it for months as the border hostilities heated up, hissing their threats as I passed by. Grandfather kept dismissing it all as overinflated bravado, so we stupidly remained here. My plan for escape is a single day too late. I back away from Brandon as my stomach gives a sickening lurch, suddenly aware of how much danger we're in. I have to get home to Grandfather and Wren. I have to get them to safety right now. And I have to get hold of Grandfather's wand so I can use what magic I have to protect them.
"Come along, Edgard."
Mistress Darrow slyly purrs to her husband, a vengeful gleam in her eye. She takes in the restless crowd on the street, Brandon and his cohorts, and me, conspicuously unarmed, unprotected.
"Leave the girl,"
she directs as Merchant Darrow hesitates, a worried expression on his face.
"Let the young men take care of the crows."
My throat goes dry and tight.
"Please, Merchant Darrow," I plead. "You've always been fair to us."
Merchant Darrow glances toward the young men, then back at me, obviously torn, a hard crease between his eyes. Another mob of men streams by the windows, brandishing knives and swords. Some are on horseback, riding toward my home downriver. My panic crests as I turn back to see Merchant Darrow and his wife quietly slipping into the back of the shop, a heavy curtain falling shut behind them. Emboldened, piggish Colton licks at his lip, splotches of red coloring his cheeks as he stares at my body.
Should we find out what's under all that black?
Leave me alone, Colton, I demand, backing up as far as I can, my skirts pressing against a grain barrel.
Leave me alone, Colton,
he jeers, his tone a high-pitched mockery of mine that sets Brandon laughing. Gehrig snorts in derision, his smile excited. Think they're holier than us, that they're the true first children.
You too good for us,
Brandon chides, eyeing me smugly. That why you go round with your nose stuck high in the air? Stop it, Brandon, I seethe, glaring at him. If I only had a wand? Or what? Brandon taunts, stalking closer. You'll wave a magic stick at us.
You don't have any idea what's coming, do you?
That's enough, I insist, my heart pounding. I have to leave. I step around him, but his muscular arm swings out to catch me.
Not so fast, little witch.
Growing desperate, I slip away from his grasp and try to go around his other side. Laughing along with his friends, Brandon grabs me and jerks me roughly backward. Infuriated, I wrench myself around and slam the base of my palm hard up against his nose, the pain of impact knifing up my arm. He stumbles back in surprise, his hand flying up to his nose, blood seeping through his fingers. I glare at him fiercely. Brandon's eyes narrow, but before I can bolt for the door, he rushes forward and smacks me hard across the face. Shocked, I stagger and lose my footing, falling to the floor. Brandon stalks toward me as I scuttle away from him, dizzy from the blow. The door to the guild market creaks open.
Hit her again, and I will split your head, Brandon. I swear I will.
Brandon stops, his fist clenched midair. Jules Christian is standing in the doorway, pointing an arrow straight at Brandon's head. Tall, skinny Jules, my Celt neighbor. His glasses are askew, his hair is its usual brown tousled mess, and he's not wearing a flag. He looks like one of them, dressed in an earth-toned tunic and pants, but he's nothing like them. He always makes up his own mind rather than following the crowd. And he's made the very bad decision to be friends with me. Chapter 2. Jules Christian. Brandon and the others stand frozen, as if stunned that bookish Jules has it in him to defy them. Filled with relief, I seize the chance Jules has given me. I burst through a gap between Brandon and Gehrig, dive around Jules and fly out the front door, almost losing my footing on the wooden steps. I skid to a halt at the sight that lies before me, my stomach clenching into a tight vise. At the center of the five-point intersection, just off to the side of the village's central raised dais, a wagon has come to a stop. An angry mob of Celts surrounds it, their collective voices rising. The wagon is jammed full of black-clad Gardnerians with dark hair and green eyes. I know them all. Before anyone in the crowd can see me, I dive behind a stack of grain barrels and peer through the gaps, my heart hammering. The streets are packed, and I can see no obvious route of escape. But if I can't get out of here, I'll end up in that wagon with the rest of my Gardnerian neighbors. Mage Krell, the mild-mannered cooper, stands against the wagon's edge and blinks, gazing vacantly at the crowd as the mob rocks the wagon and hurls insults. His glasses are gone, and a large bruise colors the side of his face. Years ago, he made me a small set of wooden animals that were so tiny I could hold them all in the palm of my hand. His elderly wife clings to him, white strands of her hair flying around like unworked wool, her eyes wide and terrified. Mage Cook, the quiet widow who scrapes by selling herbs and teas, is cowering, her arm raised protectively in front of her face. Young Sour Roland is shaking his fist and stupidly yelling back at the crowd. He falls back as a large rock hits him square in the head. Mage Cook ducks and cries out, her hands flying up to her face as more rocks are hurled at the wagon. When she lifts her head again, blood is streaming down her temple. The voices swell as a young blonde Celtic woman is dragged onto the central dais by the village smith and his strapping son, Oric. Her head is shorn, and there's a sign around her neck that reads, Crow Whore. My heart lurches into my throat as I realize it's Meek Daisy, the Smith's own daughter. She struggles in vain as they thrust her into the wagon with the Gardnerians. A limp, black-clad Gardnerian youth is dragged up next. Quiet Graham, who's been sweet on Daisy for years, his face bloodied, his sign reading Filthy Crow. I lose sight of him as the miller hurls him off the dais and into the bloodthirsty crowd, their voices surging. The sea of voices is one loud blur, but some of their rage-filled words sound out clearly.
Kill the mages before they kill us! Keltania for Celts! Smash the roaches! Kill him!
There's another one, hiding back here! I cry out as a large hand clamps down on my arm and I'm wrenched out into the open, the nearest edge of the crowd turning to face me in a sickening, murderous wave. Terror stabs through me, filling me with feral desperation. I stomp and claw at my attacker, struggling to free my arm. My other arm is grabbed tight by another man, stretching me out between them. I kick and twist wildly in a futile effort to break free. Then an ear-shattering shriek rends the air, and the entire crowd gasps and ducks. The hands restraining me fall away, and I almost stumble to the ground. I flinch as a mammoth black dragon bursts into view overhead and thunders across the sky. There's another collective ducking down as a series of shrieks echoes out from above. Two more dragons slice through the clouds, their dark wings expansive. The dragons are ghoulishly skeletal, their wings covered with sharp feathers. They push air down onto us in a heavy stream that blows my hair flat against my scalp. A foul stench washes over me, like rotted carrion set on fire. A cheer goes up from the crowd. My gaze is torn from the sky as another hand grabs my arm, but my panic recedes when I see Jules standing beside me, a finger to his lips. He pulls me backward into an alley, and I stumble to keep up with him as more dragons shriek by overhead. They're all flying in the same direction. North. Toward Gardneria. Toward my homeland. Jules's pace is furious, his bow slung over his shoulder, bobbing up and down as we run. It almost slides off as we dart down the narrow alley, then take a sharp left behind the guild market. He practically hurls me behind the clutter of damaged barrels, torn jute sacks, and other mercantile debris that's piled up. My elbow makes painful contact with a large crate as I duck down for cover. Then the light is snuffed out as Jules throws an old grain sack over the both of us, and not a moment too soon. Heavy boot heels thud down the alley and across the dirt ground right in front of us.
"She ran back here!" a man yells.
"Must be headed for the roach bank,"
another answers. My breath seems outrageously loud. I cover my mouth and nose with my arm to stifle it. I start to feel faint as my pulse hammers in my ears and fear threatens to crack me into a million jagged pieces. More boots thud by, but the voices begin to recede.
"She went this way, toward the river!"
The alley finally falls silent, and Jules peeks out. Weak twilight seeps in under the sack. My head is spinning, my heart thundering in my chest. My brother, my grandfather. My entire universe constricts to one singularity, a suffocating fear for my family. I murmur a fire spell and pull up a ball of magic from the ground. The spell sizzles up in a buzzing thread to curl tight inside my chest. A vibrating pain grows, prickling like a rotating ball of needles in the center of me. I can't do anything with this power, not without a wand, but it emanates a steadying warmth that stays my mounting panic.
"We need to get to the top of the peak,"
I rasp out breathlessly to Jules, jerking my head toward the small mountain at our backs.
"We can see everything up there, and it's the quickest way to my cottage."
I give him a significant look.
"If we can get there, I can get hold of the wand."
Jules's eyes widen, but he nods in assent. He knows I've experimented with Grandfather's wand, even though I'm not supposed to. The wand once belonged to my father, but when he died, our mage council gifted it to my virtually magic-free grandfather in tribute. It's ill-constructed, this wand,
the laminated wood unevenly layered and of substandard wood, but we're lucky to have it. Most gardenarians, especially poorer ones like us, don't own wands. Even a coarse wand like ours is outrageously expensive, difficult to craft, and even harder to obtain. But I know how to wield it. Unlike most females of my race, I've some magic in me. Every muscle tensed and on high alert, Jules quietly pulls the sack off us entirely. Hunched down, we slip into the brush behind the refuse, into the slice of forest at the edge of town that quickly slants upward to form Crike's Peak. It's our small mountain, Jules's and mine. One of the only places where a Celt and a Gardnerian can go together and not be noticed. We've whiled away more than a few summer evenings at the top. Reading, laughing, talking about history and alchemy. Jules sharing stories of the university with me. It's getting darker, and the sunset through the trees is lovely and peaceful, a mockery of the terrible chaos that's been unleashed. There's a hard chill seeping into the air, autumn beginning to dig its claws into summer. I grasp Jules's hand as he half-pulls me up the sheltered rocky path that cuts through the trees, my heavy black skirt slowing me down. We know just where to go. We're familiar with all the footholds, and my dark clothing blends into the long shadows. When we reach the jagged peak, my chest hurts like I've swallowed cut glass, and my stomach is a painful knot. More fiendish dragons soar overhead, racing across the sky. Jules and I flatten ourselves among the surrounding rocks to avoid being sighted. One dragon flies so close to the top of the mountain that I can make out the black scales of the creature's underbelly. Its taloned feet curled up underneath, tipped with terrible claws. Then the air around us goes quiet again, and we rise, trembling to our feet. My heart lurches as I take in the sight before us. There's a whole host of dragons in the air now, soldiers astride them as they wing their way north. They're like a flat black swarm of mammoth insects, screeching at each other, wings whooshing. The brilliant orange sunset silhouettes their evil forms. I swivel my head, following their movement. I rise a bit more and turn my gaze down toward the Way River, toward home. Our cottage is a single bright flame. All the Gardnerian homesteads up and down the river have been torched and are burning bright. The ball of steadying magic inside me is snuffed out in one painful jolt. "My house!" I cry. My knees give way, and I stagger down to the rocky ground. "No." Jules gasps, his eyes fixed on my cottage, face stricken. "Oh, Ancient One!" I cry, a great sob tearing from my chest, my palms clinging to the rock behind me. "Oh, Jules, do you think they're alive?" He falls beside me as more dragons streak by, his hands coming up to grip my arms. "Ancient One, help me!" I wail, my chest heaving, sure I'm going to retch. I look to Jules with crippling despair. "Do you think they killed them?" He opens his mouth, but no words come out. The entire world seems to fall away, but he catches me as I crumble, his arms closing around me. "They're dead, aren't they?" I moan into his chest, rocking my head side to side in grief. "I don't know," he says, clutching me tight. "My mother's gone. My father, not grandfather and Wren, too." His hand comes up to cradle my hair. "Oh, Jules," I sob. "Grandfather should have let me have the wand. He should have let us leave sooner." I know it, Tesla. "I could have saved them." I let out a low, agonized wail as he holds me. Choking on tears, I pull away from Jules and stagger up to peer north. The horde of dragons is a dark splotch moving relentlessly over the Caledonian Mountains, toward central Gardneria. The Celts have turned the entirety of Broad Crike's Field into a military staging area. Lines of dark tents and geometric rune-marked structures have been erected and hundreds of torches are lit. Some of the dragons are being flown down onto the field. Horrified, I turn south and spot a large mass of uniformed Celtic soldiers wearing russet military tunics over black pants. They're riding in tight formation into Doveshire via the Southern Way Road. Uruk soldiers flank them, powerful geomancers with pointed ears and the blue hair and sky-blue skin of their military class, their cobalt-blue armor marked with glowing geo-runes. Some of the Uruk are riding hydrinas, the terrible boar-shaped beasts hunched and bristling, tusks gleaming in the dying light. Some are riding in their rune-powered horseless carriages with glowing runes for wheels. The Western Way Road is clogged with Celtic families fleeing toward the coast, away from the fighting, their carts piled high with people and possessions, and festooned with red flags bearing black X's.
They've an Icaral demon!
I gasp as a black-winged soldier rides into view astride a hydrina, his eyes pinpoints of fire. He looks much like the blue Uruk soldiers, save for his glowing eyes and the feathered black wings that fan menacingly out from his back, not entirely unlike the dragons above us.
An evil one.
I slump down, dizzy, my back to a broad rock as I teeter sideways, weeping. Jules crouches down and takes my arm.
Come away with me.
There's steel in his voice.
I'll find Celtic clothes for you. We'll escape.
I thrust my arm out at him, my skin glimmering faintly emerald in the gathering darkness.
It's no use, Jules. How could we hide this?
His jaw hardens.
I'll smuggle you into Verpetia.
I'm shaking my head as the tears stream down my face.
They'll catch us. I'm sure they've closed the border.
I go to the university.
He insists.
I know people. People who could help us.
But my family...
I keen in despair, racked by sobs.
I'll be your family.
He says this with such rock-hard conviction, the tears catch in my throat. I look to him, stunned.
I'll marry you, he insists. Somehow we'll get to Verpetia and I'll marry you. We'll get a cottage there. Somewhere remote. I'll find work at the university and I'll hide you.
Gardnerians don't marry,
I remind him, my voice choked with grief for my family, my people.
We wand fast. Then we seal the bond.
Anguish rises in me like a terrible wave.
Just leave me, Jules. I'm going to get you killed. You can't help me.
I can.
I take a deep, shuddering breath. Kind, foolish Jules. I touch his face, his jutting cheekbone, his infinitely intelligent eyes.
You can't marry me, Jules.
I tell him, my mouth trembling.
I'm not a Celt.
His expression turns fierce.
I don't care. When have I ever cared?
I will always be Gardnerian.
Then be Gardnerian,
he stubbornly returns.
We'll make a life in Verpetia. And when things calm down, we can wand fast if it's possible. I don't care. I'd bind myself to you.
I've known for some time that Jules fancies me. It's been building in him over time. I've seen it in the heat lighting his gaze when he looks at me, in the new tension between us. But he's always held back, polite and unsure of my feelings. To hear him speak so boldly stuns me into silence.
We'll go up through the mountains, he says. You can stay here while I get a horse and supplies.
What if they're still alive?
My voice is small and weak, clinging to senseless hope. My crippled, doddering grandfather and my sickly 8-year-old brother. What are the chances they've escaped all this? He gives me a hard look. We both know the likely truth.
What would they want you to do?
Jules asks, his jaw set tight. A bitter laugh cuts through my tears.
Grandfather, he'd want me to push you clear off that cliff.
I start to weep anew at the thought of my gentle, staunchly religious grandfather and his overwhelming hatred of Celts. Grandfather would be horrified at the bizarre prospect of Celtic Jules trying to wand fast to his granddaughter, for the same reasons that he foolishly, blindly heeded our religion's strictures that barred women from wielding wands without first securing the Mage Council's approval.
"What would Ren want, then?"
Jules asks, softer this time. I think of my brother's wide, ready smile. Roughly, I wipe the tears from my eyes, steeling myself. "He'd want me to go with you."
"Will you do it?"
Jules asks, his hand coming up to caress my face.
"Will you come away with me?"
I nod and let him pull me into a warm embrace. A twig snaps to my left.
"Well, isn't this touching?"
Jules's whole body stiffens, and I blanch at the sound of the familiar voice. Brandon stands just a few feet away, smiling triumphantly as three Celtic soldiers surround us and unsheath their swords. Chapter 3. Prisoner.
"Where's my brother and my grandfather?"
My voice is coarse and low with dread as I stumble along the wooded path toward Crike's Field. I'm stealthily summoning up bits of magic from the ground as I'm herded along, storing the power inside me, though it hurts to gather so much without using it. All I need is a wand. Brandon laughs.
"Quit your nattering, witch."
He gives me a rough shove, which almost sends me hurtling to the ground. I choke back my outrage as I regain my balance. Narrowing my eyes, I pull up another thread of magic and wind it around the others deep inside me. Gardnerian magic runs along affinity lines. Fire, water, air, earth, and light. I have mostly fire. Lots of it. Jules is being mercilessly driven ahead of me. One of the soldiers, a tall, bearded man, gives my friend's head a hard smack every now and then, laughing when Jules nearly falls sideways. Night has taken hold, the stars shining pinpricks in the sky, shadows engulfing the woods around us. I flinch as yet another dragon flies overhead, my hidden magic sending a knife-like jab to my ribs. So many dragons. A sickening terror tries to pull me under, but I push the magic's simmering power at it, keeping the fear at bay. We're close to Craig's Field, and I can hear the raucous laughter of soldiers up ahead. My nerves fray as the shrieks of countless dragons echo above and across the ground in the distance. A staccato burst of orders is shouted nearby, and I can make out rough, low voices speaking the sharp language of the Urisk. Urisk geomancers are powerful magicians from the southern lands, able to harness the latent magic of gemstones and crystals, and their military has recently formed an alliance with the Celtic forces, against my people. The woods open up, and Jules is pushed into a clearing. I hesitate, heart thudding, my steps skidding to a halt. A mammoth barn looms before me. In the darkness of the forest, I hadn't realized that we were approaching Mage Gullen's sprawling farm, that the enemy soldiers had decided to place part of their encampment here. There are Celtic and Urisk soldiers standing and talking in small groups, the barn just beyond them. Torches on iron stands have been thrust into the dirt. They ring the large, circular clearing between farm buildings, the flames casting everything in a sinister orange glow. This flat land extends to the steep bluff that lines the entire rear boundary of the farm, offering a clear view of the full expanse of Crike's Field below. Countless campfires are scattered across the field, flickering between the rows of Celtic military tents and the geo-rune-marked shelters of the Urisk soldiers. My cottage and those of my neighbors are still ablaze in the far distance, just past the river, and the smell of charred wood hangs heavy in the air. Far to the north, I can just make out the dark shapes of dragons soaring across the night sky, still winging their way toward Gardneria.
"Move,"
Brandon orders, giving me a shove from behind. A few Celtic soldiers turn to give me the once-over, their red uniforms the color of blood in the torchlight,
their faces filling with dark interest at the sight of me. I push waves of my fire magic against the fear that threatens to undo me, the surge of warmth bolstering my courage. As I study the scattered Uruk soldiers, whose magical talents make them far more intimidating than the Celts, I find myself pulling up even more magic to steady my nerves. They're lethally streamlined in appearance, their scythes glimmering with inlaid gemstones and strapped to their backs. One geo-soldier rides by on a snarling hydrina, the beast's ugly tusked head twisting from side to side against its tight reins. There's a military sameness to most of the blue-hued Uruk soldiers, but one soldier stands boldly out. He's the most heavily rune-marked soldier here, and the dancing torchlight reflects vividly off the gemstones adorning his armor. Sapphires encircle his wrists, looped over his palms, and a string of multicolored gemstones is thrown diagonally over his chest. An aura of glowing power surrounds him, like a soft blue mist, and the sheer quantity of gems he carries marks him as a strafling, one of the most powerful classes of Uruk geomancers. The strafling stands next to a Celtic commander with a neatly trimmed blonde beard, the Celt's deep red uniform trimmed with multiple black bands around his arms and edging his cloak. Beside the Celt commander towers a huge blonde axe paladin, one of the strongest and most feared of the Celtic soldiers, a colossal axe strapped to the warrior's broad back. All three men turn to look at Jules and me as we're pushed forward, the Celt commander's eyes hard and steady, the strafling appearing curious. The axe paladin crosses his broad arms in front of his muscular chest and regards me with an open leer. I cling to my magic, swallowing back my terror and force myself to hold the axe paladin's gaze. Then my eyes alight on something thin and white tucked into the side of his weapons belt. The ball of magic churns white hot in my chest. A wand! But why would a Celt soldier be carrying a Gardnerian wand? Celts don't possess any magic.
Who's this?
The Celt commander barks at Brandon, gesturing toward Jules. Jules' fists are clenched by his sides, blood trickling down his bruised, split cheekbone. His eyes narrow in defiance, and an attempt to focus, his glasses long since smashed under Brandon's boot heel.
Jules Christian,
Brandon announces, stepping forward with bravado. He spits in Jules's direction and shoots him a look thick with disgust.
A race traitor. He was trying to hide the roach girl,
one of our soldier escorts explains, his lip curled with malice. The axe paladin lets out a low laugh and looks me over, his eyes heavy-lidded.
More than hider, I'm sure.
He smiles suggestively at Jules, then turns to me.
Do you want a wand, roach girl?
He bares his teeth, reaches down toward his groin and hoists his member.
I've got a better wand for you than that skinny boy.
The strafling shoots the axe paladin a look of disdain, but Brandon and the Celtic soldiers laugh, savoring the idea of my humiliation. I beat back my fear and shift my attention inward, pulling two more long crimson strands of magic up from the ground. The power pushes at my ribs with searing heat, straining toward the wand.
Leave her alone,
Jules snarls, his eyes bright with fury. Jules, I caution, but his eyes are locked on the axe paladin.
Or what?
Brandon jeers, shoving Jules so hard he stumbles back.
You'll split our heads? Do you swear you will?
Jules launches himself at Brandon, catching him off guard, and lands a solid blow to his broad face that knocks Brandon to the ground. Brandon's surprise morphs to rage, his expression murderous. With the surrounding Celtic soldiers cheering him on, Brandon rises to his feet and rushes at Jules. He wrestles my friend to the ground, pinning him with his superior size and punches him hard in the face.
You bastard!
I yell, moving to run toward them, only to be caught by my elbows and jerked backward by two Celtic soldiers. Furious, I struggle to wrench my arms free.
If I could only get my hands on that wand!
Breathing hard, I try to focus on gathering more power as the crowd of Celts closes in around Jules, egging Brandon on and cutting off my view of him.
The axe paladin smiles wickedly, his large chin thrust forward. He gestures to the guards, restraining me with a hard flick of his hand. My feet skid across the damp earth as they drag me to a fenced-in livestock pen to the right of the barn. The soldiers open the gate, and I'm pushed forward, my palms slapping down onto the cold, muddied ground. It's pitch dark back here, the area devoid of torches. I blink, my eyes struggling to adjust to the dimness.
Tessie!
A shadowy form grabs at my arm as I rise. It's Rosebeth, my sweet gardenerian friend from three cottages over. I cling to her, grateful to see a familiar face.
You're alive!
She sobs, hugging me.
Thank the Ancient One, you're alive!
You embrace her? A disgusted voice sounds from the blackness of the pen. She ran off with a Celt! I can just make out the young gardenerian woman's hate-filled eyes, large and luminous in a beautiful face. Her skin, like mine, shimmers a faint emerald in the dark. She spits on the ground in my direction, then makes the sign to ward off the power of the evil ones. Stainin. She hisses under her breath. Race traitor. I squint into the darkness. There are five other gardenerians in the pen, all huddled in a corner near the hateful girl. All of them elegant Upper River gardenerians. I can just make out their dark silken clothing in the moonlight, a stark contrast to the black woolen homespun Rosebeth and I wear, like most of the impoverished Lower River gardenerians. In another corner of the pen, a small figure is curled in a tight ball, sobbing and dressed in light-hued Celtic attire. Unlike us gardenerians, there is no faint emerald shimmer to her skin, and she's been shorn bald. It's meek Celtic Daisy, the smith's daughter. I suddenly realize that the pen holds only women. Young women. I turn my head and see the shadows of three Celtic soldiers hanging over the fence, watching us. Their eyes glitter in the moonlight. Trying not to panic, I look back at Rosebeth.
Did you see Wren?
I whisper, taking hold of her arm as she sobs.
My grandfather?
Weeping, she shakes her head, her face a mask of misery. She gestures toward the barn.
Wagons keep coming, full of gardenerians. They're forcing everyone in there, all but us.
Rosebeth casts a frightened, sidelong glance at the young Celts.
What are we going to do?
She asks me imploringly, her voice quavering. She's chewing on her lips so hard she's bloodied it. I look toward the men. The Celtic soldiers are passing a flask back and forth as they laugh and leer at us. But over their shoulders, I can see that the crowd around Jules has dispersed. He's been dumped by the edge of the barn, lying on his side. His face is swollen beyond recognition, one arm cradling the other as if it's broken. Anger swells in me, and I turn, my focus honed on the axe paladin.
So, are you rich now?
The strafling idly points at the wand that hangs from the axe paladin's belt. The axe paladin spits on the ground.
Some roach filth south of here got hold of it, and cut down several members of our guard. I'm to bring it to the Tenhold Armory.
Why not destroy the cursed thing?
The strafling asks, eyeing the wand with suspicion.
We've tried,
the paladin says.
It is surprisingly hard to break, and it's oddly powerful.
My attention lights up. I've heard tales of wands like these, wands of great power.
What will we do?
Rosebeth asks me again in that tremulous voice, clinging to my arm and breaking my focus. Quiet, I order, more sternly than I'd intended, but I need to concentrate. I'm only a level 3 mage, not a huge amount of power, to be sure, but I do have a unique talent. I can pull up threads of magic from the elements and knit them together, amplifying my power. I've done this on only a few occasions, experimenting with grandfather's wand while making medicines, and using the ability once to defend myself. Each time the spell linking gave me a fever and scoured me out, as if I'd been grievously ill. It's dangerous what I'm doing.
Magic can turn deadly when gathered like this, catching on the very life force of a mage and choking it clear out. The last time I linked spells, I was attempting a complicated medicine to treat Ren's chronic illness. Grandfather found me passed out in the kitchen amid vials and scattered potions, and he forbade me from ever, ever using his wand again. I was feverish and bedridden for days, but more devastated over the loss of the wand than anything else. I've never tried to pull in and link together as much power as I'm holding right now, and I know I'm playing with fire. Deadly, raging, elemental fire. My chest is full of burning pain, but my resolve is strengthened by it. I coldly assess our situation. We're completely surrounded by a sea of soldiers, but the men are hardly the only threat. Several Urisk Geo soldiers struggled to contain a dragon nearby, the beast's whole body undulating with rage. The dragon turns its head to look at me, and bares its long fangs, pinning me with its eerie white eyes. Terror claws at me, but I force myself to stand my ground as Rosebeth cries out and hides behind me, her slender body quivering. A tall, winged figure steps into the clearing, and I feel my bravado slip away. I take a frightened step back as the Icaral demon casts its glowing orange eyes around. His black wings arch threateningly, and the terrifying evil of his grinning expression is heightened by the torchlight. He balances a bright ball of flame over his palm as he slinks over to the Celt commander, the Strafling, and the Axe Paladin. Eyeing the Icaral demon warily, the Celt commander unfurls a scroll and glances down to read.
"What's the word, Lucian?"
the Strafling asks, his words elegantly accented and clipped.
"We wait, and march into Gardneria tomorrow morn."
Lucian sighs, rolling up the scroll and passing it back to a young Celtic soldier. A new wagon pulls in, filled with Gardnerians, all of them well-to-do Upper River folk. They're roughly herded out, blinking in confusion, the children crying. They are met by a mob of laughter.
"All hail the powerful Gardnerian mages! Where's your great mage now?"
A Celtic lieutenant bows toward them.
"The Gardnerian mages, rulers of Arthia."
Two other Celtic soldiers laugh and roughly yank at the Gardnerians as they descend from the carriage, pulling one old man down so hard he tumbles to the ground and has trouble getting back up. A young, slender Urisk Geo soldier strides forward and salutes both the Strafling and the Celt commander by bringing his fist to his chest.
"This should be all of them, Commander Talon,"
he says, his accent as pronounced as the Strafling's. All of them? Could Ren and Grandfather be locked in the barn, too? Lucian Talon makes a casual gesture toward the barn.
"Get them in there with the others. We'll deal with them later."
He grimaces, as if this is an unpleasant but necessary task. My heart clenches along with my fists. I inhale sharply, pulling the power in tight. The young Urisk Geo soldier's brow tenses, and he glances briefly at the captive Gardnerians.
"The children, too, Commander Talon."
I can sense his discomfort, see him swallow and blink with stunned reluctance. The Celtic commander fixes him with a hard glare.
"There's no other way, Corvine. You know that. If they raise up another great mage, they'll kill us all."
The young man eyes the terrified children and the elderly man as they're herded toward the barn, crying and pleading. He looks to the Strafling, as if silently imploring him for mercy. The Strafling glances briefly at the Gardnerians, then shoots the young Urisk soldier a hard, cautioning glare as he murmurs something to him in terse Uriskal.
"Don't go all sentimental on us, Corvine,"
Lucian says to the young Geo soldier, his tone unforgiving.
"Clearly you don't fully understand the threat we're under here. Any one of these roaches, big or small, could be their next great mage. You've heard the diviner's prophecies from both your people's seers and ours. He's here, that great mage, hidden among their people somewhere. Do you have a problem with this, soldier?"
The Axe Paladin growls, his eyes glittering malevolently. the wand moon bright at his waist. The Orisk soldier's sapphire eyes are a storm of conflict as he glances toward the Gardnerian families. The strafling snaps at him in Uriskal, and the young geo-soldier bows and strides off, casting one last troubled look behind him. The Icaral demon is eyeing the new group of Gardnerians, still holding the ball of fire in his palm. He hisses and hurls the flames at the mages, and they cry out, stamping the fire out of their clothing, the children shrieking in terror. The Celtic commander scowls at the strafling.
Tell your Icaral demon to leave off.
What are they going to do?
Rosebeth sobs hysterically, tugging at my sleeve.
Are they going to set fire to the barn? My family is in there! Tessie, why won't you answer me?
She starts murmuring pleading prayers, tracing the star sign of the Ancient One's protection over and over in the air. The Celts unlock the barn door. In the shadows are the dark shapes of my people, pressed together tight. Right in the front stands a skinny boy, and recognition sweeps through me as torchlight illuminates his face. My eyes fly open wide.
Run!
I choke out. He sees me and lets out an unearthly scream.
Tessie!
I hurl myself at the fence and struggle to climb over it in my long skirts, a nail tearing at my ankle. Ren bursts out of the barn and lunges toward me. He's quickly caught by one of the Celtic soldiers, jerked back by his arm.
Ren!
I scream, finally hoisting myself to the top of the fence. A searing pain erupts all over my scalp as I'm yanked back by my hair, a strong arm clenching my arm and thrusting me down to the mud, a rumbling laugh emanating from my attacker's throat. I briefly turn to find the axe paladin looming over me, but I don't care. My magic boils blood red as I spring up and hurl myself at the fence once more, straining toward Ren as he's desperately reaching for me. The huge Celt laughs behind me as he grabs my upper arms, and I kick and struggle against him.
Tessie!
Ren cries, clawing at the soldier restraining him.
Let me go! Tessie!
The soldier pulls his hand back and smacks Ren hard in the face. My world contracts, the scene before me slowing as Ren's mouth opens, his face contorted, his scream drawn out.
Tessie!
The image of a white bird flashes before my eyes as the soldiers drag Ren back to the barn and throw him in. Just before the door is closed and locked, I see the face of my grandfather, his expression a mask of agony. A great tide of fiery rage wells up within me, burning away the terrible odds, the axe paladin, the dragons and hydrinas, the Icaral demon. I wrench myself around, tear my arm from the axe paladin's grip, and close my fist around the wand. Chapter 4 The White Wand. Flames shoot from the tip of the wand as soon as I grasp it. A violent wave of magic drives the air from my lungs as fire courses out of the wand, strafing Celt and Orisk soldiers and setting several trees alight with a crackling explosion. I round on the axe paladin with a fierce cry, and the fire whips out toward him. He screams with pain and falls back. Fury courses through me as I send fire out in wide, repeating arcs, driving the soldiers farther away from the barn as an arrow whirs past, barely missing me. I hold tight to my woven knot of spells, readying it as soldiers all around aim their weapons. The Orisk pull stones to their palms, and the Icaral demon snarls and gathers a growing ball of flame above his hand. The Celt commander shouts an order, and a line of archers forms, drawing their bows. Men's voices call out, and the arrows are released in a unified whoosh. The Icaral's fireball is hurled straight at me, spears are launched at my head, and a kaleidoscope of searing flame bursts from affinity stones. I slap one hand over the other and grasp at the wand, fall to my knees, and send my linked power up into a great dome of a shield. Weapons and flames and stone magic slam up against it with shuddering force and are knocked back. I'm shocked by the immensity of my power, magnified by this wand. My affinity power courses out in a translucent golden river rising up over me, over the livestock pen, and over the barn.
Great stabs of pain smash into my shoulders and through my arms from the impact of the soldiers' relentless assault. The blows of countless weapons reverberating against my shield, nearly knocking the wand clear out of my vibrating fists. Jules has pulled himself up to a sitting position and is propped up against the barn wall, gaping at me, the eye that's not swollen shut gone wide. "Pry the door open!" I yell to Rosebeth and the young women in the pen, everyone lit by golden light and flashes of color as the Urisk and the Ikaral demon hurl geomagic and fire at the shield. The young women race for the barn's locked door. The Strafling clenches the stones looped around his palms and sends shockwave after shockwave of sapphire fire exploding against my shield. My arms and shoulders scream with pain, my body jerking with each blow. But I hold on, keeping the shield intact.
"Stand down!"
the Celtic commander booms out. The assault abruptly ceases. I'm panting, drenched in sweat as I struggle to hold the dome of energy together. The Celtic commander moves off to my right and converses in low tones with several underlings, his eyes trained on me with careful calculation. They're waiting, waiting for my strength to give out.
"Hurry!"
I call over my shoulder to the young women, desperation on the edge of panic coursing through me. But the barn door is refusing to give way. The hateful Upper River girl lets out an angry snarl and kicks the door in frustration.
"Check the back,"
she yells to the other young women. "Search for rotted wood." She calls to the gardenarians inside for help breaking open a passage, and they shout back to her, their voices muffled by the barn's walls. A cacophony of hammering and pounding against the barn ensues. Smoke rises thick in the air, my fire still crackling in the surrounding woods. Soldiers watch me with dark intent, and even darker smiles. My heart thuds with a painful slowness, my pulse loud in my ears. The power, a steady stream through me, flowing up from the ground. I concentrate hard and weave the shield even tighter, sending the power upward, the tips of my fingers growing numb, my arms trembling. A gentle hand flows down over my arm and grasps my wrist to steady me. Jules pushes himself tight against my back, propping me up.
"What are you planning?"
His voice is calm, the words muffled by the swelling of his mouth. His presence helps to soothe the fear that's making a slow crawl through my belly. "I can move the shield," I tell him, my throat tight. "We get everyone out, and we leave."
"How long can you maintain it?"
His voice is purposefully measured. I don't know," I admit, terror breaking through. He gives my wrist an encouraging squeeze, his cheek pressed to mine.
"I love you, Tesla."
He says it with ardent certainty. "We are going to die," I realize. "I love you too," I tell him, knowing we don't mean this in the same way. But what does that matter now?
We might all be dead soon, and Jules is nearly as dear to me as Ren.
Exhaling sharply, I murmur a spell and push a warm wave of magic out to bolster the shield, my teeth and the muscles of my neck clenched tight.
"Fight them,"
he tells me, his breath warm on my face.
"Fight them to the end."
Rosebeth rushes over to my side. "We can't get the door open," she relays with breathless urgency. "But they've managed to pull a board off the back of the barn. They're all back there, prying at it." "Hurry," I tell her grimly, my feet tingling, my toes gone numb, the numbness in the tips of my fingers starting to spread.
"Are you tiring, little witch?"
The Ikaral demon calls to me with a sneer, his glowing eyes hot, an evil smile curling on his mouth. His voice is like a snake's hiss as he stalks around my shield. He unfurls his black wings and starts to summon another ball of fire, the fire orb churning and growing over his palm. The huge axe paladin is pacing like a giant wildcat in front of me. Scarlet burns streaked across his face, charred black lines across his uniform.
You will tire eventually, Roach.
He snarls.
And then we will break through your shield and take you apart, piece by piece.
Don't listen to them, Jules urges, tightening his grip on my wrist.
Listen to me.
You can hold the shield. I know you